Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. John's away today, officially. And Sherry Elliker is filling in, as she is often doing these days. It's great to have you on board, Sherry, this time with a little more notice.
Well, thank you. I'm always happy to be here, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So, we have an interesting Seattle mayor's race. We're in the midst of a campaign between a former council president, Bruce Harrell, and a present council president, Lorena Gonzalez. And Como News, Matt Markovich got an interview with Bruce Harrell, one of the candidates, and he asked a very provocative and intriguing question. Let's hear.
And that, for me, I'm done. Can't do it.
Former Chief Carmen Best could not lay off officers the city council demanded a year ago, so she resigned.
When it's time, it's time.
But she could come back.
One of your most important hires, if you become mayor, will be that of police chief. Would you ask Carmen Best to come back?
So Carmen and I have had many discussions, and I don't want to, as the expression we say, is put her on Front Street. But I will say that what the city council did do, I thought, was I thought that was poor form.
It was the height of the protests. Police had abandoned the East Precinct. There was CHOP, a call to defund police by 50%, and the council wanted to cut her salary by 40%.
It just felt very vindictive and very punitive.
As an African-American woman that had faced so much, I think, unfairness in her life, that understood the plea and demands of community, that also understand the need for effective policing, and I think she's a leader.
We wanted to ask the same question to Harrell's challenger, Lorena Gonzalez, but she canceled our scheduled interview with her, and her campaign has not given us a rescheduled date.
She did tell the Seattle Times in June, "I think the department could benefit from an external candidate," and told the Northwest Progressive Institute, "I am looking for a candidate who is willing to challenge the status quo from within, someone who's not afraid to say no."
You basically gave a positive assessment of Chief Best. What about Adrian Diaz?
There are a lot of decisions that I just read about in the newspaper that I scratch my head on. And I am not seeing the kind of transitional leadership.
Adrian Diaz has been the interim police chief since Carmen Best left and has indicated he liked the job. Now he may know his former chief could be his competition if Bruce Harrell becomes mayor.
And so we've had many conversations throughout my campaign, and I rely on her for advice, and I'll sort of leave it at that.
So I know you've come on board the Cairo station wagon relatively recently, so you probably weren't around for the Carmen Best years as a Seattle police chief. But she's had a really storied career here, Sherry. She started off, in fact, that's why so many of us in the media know her well. She used to be the flack for the Seattle Police Department. She was very easy to deal with. She's been on the force for 28 years, got a really easy personality to deal with, you know, in terms of press relations and the like. And she eventually became head of the police department and she was indeed in charge under the most extreme times for the Seattle Police Department during the last summer, during all of the social justice protests and the CHOP incident, the abandonment of the East Precinct. So she was really at the eye of the storm through so much of this, and I thought she really played her political cards well. She, up in the middle of all this, said, "Fine, if you are really going to be that, dismissive of the work of the Seattle Police Department, I'm out of here." And she just sort of up and left without much warning. I thought it was quite an effective power move on her part. And now I think it's brilliant of Bruce Harrell to kind of float the possibility. And I give Matt Markovich full credit for asking the question, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Harrell campaign isn't, you know, pleased as punch about this idea that maybe Carmen Best could come back. It's a Bruce Harrell represents something of a return of the old guard, and I think a lot of people in Seattle would see that as a reassuring sign, because as demonized as the Seattle Police Department might have been this past year and this past summer of a protest, the year before this last one, she is really hard to demonize, Carmen Best, just as her, you know, just as a person. And I think this is a brilliant political move on Bruce Harrell's part to reintroduce introduce her as a possible police chief. What do you think of all this?
Well, I think it's very interesting, and I have a couple questions for you. Do you think, Tom, that she would be able to return and do the job without any bitterness towards the city council?
No.
That's what I thought. So
No.
I mean,
it's clear. I mean, she has the city council in her sights. Now, here's what's interesting about this. Lorena Gonzalez is the I'm pretty sure she is still the council president, and she's running for mayor. And she was part of the defund Seattle police movement. She represents the most progressive wing of the city council. Bruce Harrell is somebody who had been he was a longtime council member and stepped down before the recent social activism days. And I think that if Bruce Harrell is elected mayor, that might be seen as a sign that Seattle is ready to kind of sort of a little retrenchment, maybe, that they're willing to sort of stay back and say, okay, maybe we overreacted, maybe we went too far. That, at least, I think it would be the political calculation. Right now, in fact, we might as well mention this. The city council, there are not a lot of seats up. Lorena Gonzalez's seat is up, and there is it's a battle between, I guess, a progressive Democrat and a moderate Democrat, for want of a better word. And right now, the moderates tend to be doing better. There's actually a Republican, yes, a Republican in Seattle running for city attorney who is running against an abolitionist Democrat, so a very progressive Democrat when it comes to city attorney work. And right now, according to the poll, and again, as Stuart Elway of the Elway Poll Service says, this is just a snapshot in time, it's not a prediction, but the moderate candidates in those three races tend to be the ones that are ahead right now. The latest poll with Bruce Harrell and Lorena Gonzalez, Bruce Harrell has 42% support, 27% support for Lorena Gonzalez, so a significant difference there. And still, 25% of the electorate is undecided. So it's still up in the air, but right now it looks like the city is leaning more moderate. If that happens to be the case, Carmen Best might feel reassured. Now, there's still a majority of the council that I think would be on the council that was voting to defund it. And by the way, again, I'm just sort of filling you in since I know you weren't here for a lot of this. The call for 50% was quickly cut, and I think it's now down to something like 14% in their, you know, Seattle police funds and all this. So there's been kind of a backing away of the height of the anger at the Seattle Police Department funding. We'll still see. It's going to be a battle for Seattle. But my guess is if those three moderate positions come out ahead and Bruce Harrell is elected mayor, Carmen Best might feel like she's willing to forgive and forget if Seattle is willing to forgive and forget. That would be my prediction at this point, at least.
Do you think that Lorena Gonzalez will keep Adrian Diaz as the Would she promote him from not being the interim chief, but to be the chief if she gets in?
Okay, now, to be fair to Lorena Gonzalez, she didn't do an interview with Como, so all we have are, as Markovich mentioned in his report, we have things that she said in other interview situations, and it seems pretty clear to me, the writing on the wall is that Adrian Diaz is not going to be the police chief permanently because Bruce Harrell, my guess is right now, and this might be just a false hunch, but that he would name his good friend Carmen Best back as the chief if she's willing to come back. And I know she's sort of moved on, but I think her ties are still strong. And the comment that Lorena Gonzalez had about who should be the next police chief, her suggestion was that it should come from outside, an external source. So my hunch is, and she hasn't named anyone that she would appoint, but my hunch is that Adrian Diaz would be maybe a fallback possibility. But it didn't sound like either candidate is saying, wow, you know, Mr. Diaz, you've been done such a great job. We want you to stay in place. So I would be surprised if that was the end result.
It reminds me of when there was a new mayor in Baltimore, and they went to a nationwide search for a new police commissioner is what they call it there.
Sure.
And the other one, the other police commissioners, there was like three or four in a row that all either got ousted or arrested. I'm not kidding. Within like a year. So they did this exhaustive search and they found a guy that was from New Orleans. And they paid him like $250 a year, which is very high for Baltimore. And he came in and nothing has gotten better since he's been there. And it was the problem was they really didn't need to have somebody external. They needed to have someone on the inside track that knew the city, that understood the city, that had a history with it. So I'm wondering if Seattle is a little bit like that, that to have somebody from the outside come in may not fit as well as somebody that's been at the job like Carmen Best, who knows it.
Yeah.
If she can get past some of the, you know, the resentment that she's got to feel for what happened before.
Well, since you're an outsider, I'll throw this into the mix. The irony of this is that we did a big nationwide search. Jenny Durkin, I'm pretty sure was the mayor at the time. And they came up with their three finalists. They were all outsiders. And there was such cry and hue about, what about Carmen Best? She's our own. She's grown up here with us. You know, everyone gets, you know, likes her. How dare you? And so, they did a lot of backpedaling and, they said, you know what? That's a good point. We are going to include Carmen Best in the mix. Even though she didn't make the final three, they included her in the final four, and son of a gun if they didn't name her chief after all. And the front runner, who had been kind of, tipped off in the press as being the front runner, he ended up taking an advisory role and then disappearing. I don't even know whatever happened to him. So there's a lot of wrangling within the Seattle Police Department. A lot of people, you know, may love Carmen Best. Others may not. But there's not only wrangling within the police department. There's wrangling within the corridors of power in City Hall and all that. So it's kind of a messy situation. She got in kind of a messy fashion and then left in a kind of messy fashion. And I think it would be a feather in her cap if she could come back and kind of restore to dignity the Seattle Police Department's reputation. We'll see if that ever happens. But again, just politically, I think it's a really smart move on Bruce Harrell's part. Listen, just because I'm such a fan of The Wire and you mentioned Baltimore, I've got to say that the corruption business that you were referencing doesn't surprise me. How does The Wire, if you haven't seen The Wire, it's one of the greatest HBO series ever about all sorts of intrigue with the police department and every other civic institution in Baltimore. What's Baltimore's take on it? Do they kind of roll their eyes going, yeah, that's not us? Or do they say, wow, that is spot on?
Oh, it's spot on. Everybody agrees. Everybody does. Everybody thinks it is completely sort of an inside scoop on what really happens. Yep. But they resent it in a way because they don't want Baltimore to always be portrayed that way. So that's the general impression. But it's the truth. I mean, it really is. It's a very corrupt city. It's been that way for years and years and probably will never change. Although I will say I've never seen more well-intended people there. You know, there's been so many people that have tried to make a difference and that have tried to change things and to help with everything from crime to the opioid crisis to homelessness to poverty. And it just the needle just doesn't move. So I think it's one of the many cities in this country that have to deal with those types of things. And there are a lot of people that really try very hard, but it just doesn't go away. Just doesn't get any better.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think Seattle doesn't suffer so much from corruption as competence issues, I think, would be the we don't have that kind of a East Coast flair for corruption. I'm sure there is, there are plenty of examples. But in general, it's more, the question of can we do what we want to do and are we of the same mind? So anyway, that's an update on the mayor's race. I do think it's interesting, too. Lorena Gonzalez says clearly she has a lot of union support. She has a lot lot of minority community support, but she is avoiding some mainstream interviews. Now, I know that Jean Ursula's show has been trying to get her on, you know, beforehand and before the primary and then after the primary. I don't think she's appeared there. She hasn't. She declined to do a Cuomo interview or has not arranged one yet. I think it might be her decision that maybe, you know, more mainstream, you know, venues are not where her strengths lie. But right now, I think that Lorena Gonzalez could be in trouble. If she has a 15-point spread, and there's a 5%, you know, a margin of error, but if she's down that far, she's really got to pick up her campaign. Now, we're still a good, you know, month and a half away from Election Day, but still, that's sort of the writing on the wall I see at this point.
And, okay, and Bruce Harrell has a lot more money, right? I mean, he's
yes.
got a considerable
Interesting.
More fundraising.
Yes. No, he has. Interestingly enough for us, because I, you know, I'm a longtime Seattleite and I've known Bruce, I've interviewed him before and all this. I didn't realize how individually, personally wealthy he happens to be too, because he's always, you know, he came up, he was an early union guy, and he's come up from, you know, I don't know if you'd call it the school of hard knocks, but he's certainly not, you know, he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth, but he has done quite well for himself, he and his wife. And it is interesting now to see someone from the outside like Bruce Harrell once was now be seen as the insider candidate or the traditional candidate. And again, just to give you, Sherry, some perspective, we tend to, so Jenny Durkin, who I was a big fan of, by the way, I think she's a really bright, she was our U.S. attorney, really sharp. She ran against a much more liberal, activist, progressive type. I think Carrie Moon, I think was her name. And the city voted for Durkin. My hunch is that the Durkin forces are probably aligning themselves with the Bruce Harrell forces, not literally, but just in terms of the tendency that Seattle likes to think of themselves as very progressive, very progressive, but then at some point, that's a little too progressive, and they pull back a bit. Bruce Harrell, like Jenny Durkin, has more of the support of the business community than Lorena Gonzalez has. But Lorena Gonzalez has a lot of strong union support, so I wouldn't count her out. With 25% still undecided, but right now, Bruce Harrell looks like he's in a strong position. We'll just put it that way.
Yep,
okay, enough of Seattle city politics. And yes, indeed, you are listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly away on business, Sherry Elicker filling in. So, Sherry, there was a story yesterday we just didn't get to. Not that we didn't think it was important. I tend to go on and on too often. We don't get to all the stories we wanted to, but we thought it would be worth a quick look back. And that is the testimony from four of the U.S. gymnasts who initially reported the abuse. They make up 4 out of 200, I think 35 or 265 victims of Larry Nassar, who's now serving life in prison for his abuse. But yesterday they were testifying, and I remember when the news first heard the headline yesterday, I thought, wow, this story, it seems like it's been around forever. Why now are they testifying before Congress? And I had forgotten that an inspector general had just done a big investigation into the investigation about the Larry Nassar situation. And he came out with a very damning report accusing especially the FBI of really dropping the ball. And we thought that it would be worth taking a one-day-later look at some of the testimony. This first piece is from Michaela Maroney. She talked about the response she got from FBI agents after she detailed in a lengthy phone conversation all of the abuse.
I then told the FBI about Tokyo, the day he gave me a sleeping pill for the plane ride, to then work on me later that night. That evening, I was naked, completely alone, with him on top of me, molesting me for hours. I told them I thought I was going to die that night because there was no way that he would let me go. But he did. I told them I walked the halls of Tokyo Hotel at 2 a.m. at only 15 years old. I began crying at the memory over the phone, and there was just dead silence. I was so shocked at the agent's silence and disregard for my trauma. After that minute of silence, he asked, "Is that all?" Those words in itself was one of the worst moments of this entire process for me. to have my abuse be minimized and disregarded by the people who were supposed to protect me, just to feel like my abuse was not enough.
Again, there was hours of this kind of a testimony. We'll hear just one more, but just, it just brings, it's one thing to, you know, understand intellectually, yeah, this kind of abuse happened, but to hear, these, young women, detail it, it's really emotional stuff. This is gymnast Aliyah Raisman. She also blamed the FBI for, Nasser's ability to continue to abuse.
The FBI failed to interview pertinent parties in a timely manner. It took over 14 months for the FBI to contact me, despite my many requests to be interviewed by them. The records establish that Steve Penny, FBI agent Jay Abbott, and their subordinates worked to conceal Nasser's crimes. I felt pressured by the FBI to consent to Nasser's plea deal. The agent diminished the significance of my abuse and made me feel my criminal case wasn't worth pursuing. My reports of abuse were not only buried by USAG, USOPC, but they were also mishandled by federal law enforcement officers who failed to follow their most basic duties.
Okay, and so she mentioned a couple of names. I want to kind of clarify. So Jay Abbott, it was the FBI guy in charge of the Indianapolis office where she made her first account, and then referenced Stephen Penny. He was the USA Gymnastics. And get this, this is the kind of thing that's so infuriating. In addition to the power, the emotion, you know, the emotional response, how hard it was for these girls at the time and now young women to you know, go through this kind of abuse. It's the institutional component of it that's so infuriating, because even when they, you know, fessed up, they actually were willing to talk about it. It was neglected. Get this. This is a report from the inspector general that they found that Jay Abbott, again, the FBI guy in Indianapolis, spoke with former USA Gymnastics president Stephen Penny about a potential job opportunity he had with the U.S. Olympic Committee while continuing to participate in bureau discussions regarding the Nasser investigation. It's that kind of, it's just so infuriating to think that, well, if I don't go too hard on this, I might even land a job. That it's just so disgusting. I don't have any other word for it. The Indianapolis field officer was fired, you know, hours before, I think, this hearing yesterday. But it is the kind of structural response that we as Americans need to be aware of and feel responsible for. And now, just so it didn't look like it doesn't look like the FBI was trying to ignore this any further. This is Chris Wray also testifying yesterday about what the inspector general discovered and what we heard yesterday from the young women.
I want to be crystal clear. The actions and inaction of the FBI employees detailed in this report are totally unacceptable. These individuals betrayed the core duty that they have of protecting people. They failed to protect young women and girls from abuse. And the work we do certainly is often complicated and uncertain, and we're never going to be perfect. But the kinds of fundamental errors that were made in this case in 2015 and 16 should never have happened, period. And as long as I'm FBI director, I'm committed to doing everything in my power to make sure they never happen again.
A little late, but at least there's acknowledgement. And then he was asked if the FBI has changed since those years, 2015, 2016.
So there's a whole bunch of things we've done differently. First, we've accepted every single one of Inspector General Horowitz's recommendation and then some. We've already begun implementing all of those. We are strengthening policies. We're strengthening procedures. We're strengthening training. We're strengthening our systems. All building in double checks, triple checks, safeguards, oversight, different ways of making sure that we cannot have, as occurred here in certain instances, a single point of failure.
Sherry, the floor is yours.
I think this is so scandalous and just so horrifying. You and I talked before the Olympics, Tom, and we talked about the pressure that these young people are put under.
Yeah.
And the conversation that we had was around the idea that, you know, maybe we need to reexamine the Olympics in terms of, you know, what the childhoods that are given up because of this.
Yes.
So I can only imagine how horrible it must have been for these young women who are leaders in their sport, who are just, you know, such outstanding athletes, to be abused like this and be expected at the same time to represent this country and then to be ignored and dismissed. It's just abuse on top of abuse. I really hope that the FBI takes stock after this and they do the right thing from here on out, because it's just inexcusable to me.
Hear, hear. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly away, Sherry Elliker filling in as usual. You're getting to be quite the regular around here, Sherry, and I think everybody's happy for it. So,
well, thank you.
There's a story that we are... This Jeopardy saga, it continues, and it's beginning to feel endless. Neither John nor I are huge Jeopardy fans. I mean, I grew up with it. I was a kid when the first version on. I predate Alex Trebek, Jeopardy days when it was Art Fleming, but I haven't really paid it much mind for the last couple of decades. And yet we constantly are talking about the replacement strategy, for the late lamented Alex Trebek. And one of the reasons I think that it's gotten kind of its hooks in us as a Seattle radio show is that Ken Jennings is the prima donna of Jeopardy, and he's a local kid, a local guy, actually lives in my neighborhood, I've been told. I don't know where he lives, but Ken Jennings, it was in the running to replace Alex Trebek, and so there's kind of a lot of local rooting interest in the story. But what's funny to me about this is, I thought it started out as a brilliant marketing scheme to have guest hosts, you know, 14, 15 guest hosts each do a week to build up momentum to see who they were going to finally name. I thought it was a brilliant chance to, you know, keep the Jeopardy show in the headlines, or at least in some of the, you know, water cooler chatter. And I think they did a heck of a job until now. I think it's kind of blown up in their face after all of this, you know, raising the possibility of, oh, could it be, you know, a famous person? Could it be a celebrity like Aaron Rodgers, of all people, the, you know, the Green Bay Packers quarterback? Or could it be, you know, all sorts of famous people? It turned out they ended up naming an insider, a guy named Mike Richards, who none of us really knew. He was the producer, one of the executive producers of the show, and he'd hosted a few others. And they made the big announcement. It was kind of a letdown at that point. And then it became even a bigger letdown when, after a week, enough stuff in his past came up to bite him, and he ended up being kicked off the show, and then kicked off he lost his executive producing stance as well. And so now the big scandal at Jeopardy is who's going to replace him. And they've just done a kind of interim announcement. Ken Jennings, yay, local boy, and Mayim Bialik from Big Bang Theory have decided that they are going to, between the two of them, they're just going to trade off their responsibilities when either of them are available to do it till the end of the year. So now, I mean, that's only a few months away, but we've got about three more months, and they now have to continue their search for a co-host, and maybe it'll end up being one of those two, but still, it just seemed like a brilliant scheme on the drawing board ended up blowing up in their face by not doing their due diligence when they finally named somebody named Mike Richards.
Yeah, I think this is a kind of a, I don't know, a weird move by Jeopardy, right? They're just kind of kicking the can down the road.
Right,
I mean, they have auditioned enough people. And mm-hmm. I never really knew this, Tom. Maybe you can answer this question. Were all of the people that were auditioning or trying out, for instance, Robin Roberts and Anderson Cooper, were they all interested in the job, or were they just guest hosting to try it out just to see how they would do?
Well, so my understanding is that the people that did it were really interested in the show. Like Joe Buck, you know, big sports announcer. Now, is he really going to take time to away from his sports announcing to do this? The kind of show that Jeopardy is, and this is how Aaron Rodgers justified it too, he figured he could do both. Because they film so many seasons, you know, I mean, so many shows right in a row after, you know, show after show after show, that you could maybe pack them in, and because it's a syndicated show, they could just dole them out at their own time. I don't know, ultimately. I think it would be a huge honor for a lot of them. Surprisingly, a huge honor. I didn't realize how coveted that slot is. I don't think any of them would have given up their day job, but I think they might have been willing to kind of try to work their schedule into Jeopardy's or vice versa. But, yeah, ultimately, I don't know. If they had offered it to George Stephanopoulos, who already is working 6 days a week on ABC.
In the morning.
I'll do it in the morning. Yeah, I'll do that on Sunday afternoons or something.
Sure.
I don't really know. I think it was all for the publicity of it. A lot of people came off looking, you know, good at that, and maybe it burnished their image that they were even considered as a possible host. It sort of baffles me that a game show host is considered such a good get. But, you know, I guess people really liked Alex Trebek. To me, if they offered me the Jeopardy gig, or, you know, as opposed to this show, if the money was the same, I would rather do this show in a million years. The money probably wouldn't be the same. And so maybe I'd have to consider it. But
you might have to think about it, right?
That's right. And you too, I imagine.
Well, I mean, we've got till January, right? Because
exactly.
You never know. They've
we
still
got
to go. They got a new talent
ring.
Pool they got to go to. So you never know.
Perfect. Okay. By the way, do you know where they film it? I don't even know. Is it in California?
I believe it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be a long commute for you.
Yeah. Okay. Somehow I'd find the time.
Exactly. I'm sure most of us would. Okay. Enough of that idle speculation. I'm rooting for Ken Jennings personally. That's as close as I'm going to get to the hosting gig.